Stay tuned now on 1460 WVOX for The Ballot Box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin. The Ballot Box is a monthly program brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Now, The Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to The Ballot Box, production of the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. I'm Tamar Tate. I'm coming to you today with my co-host, Nina Lubin, courtesy of WVOX, our hometown station, and our wonderful sound engineer, Gerald Bell. We have two very interesting guests today on The Ballot Box. First, we're going to be speaking with Catherine White, who's the Executive Director of the New Rochelle Chamber of Commerce. And then in the second half of the show, we'll be speaking with Catherine Borgia, who is a Westchester County legislator and the co-chair of the Election Information Gathering Task Force. So really good show up ahead. But first, I just want to have some quick ballot box updates. First, some good news. The League of Women Voters of New Rochelle received a Humanities New York Reading and Discussion grant to hire four different facilitators for book groups on Votes for Women. That's going to be held from fall through the end of January, so stay tuned for details. It should be really interesting. Today is an interesting day for the League of Women Voters of New York State because we're going to be testifying at a joint legislative hearing on New York's first redistricting commission. So stay tuned. And then also noteworthy is that the state legislature is predicted to resume session on July 20th. The League is going to be working with our coalition partners to advance an agenda of bills relating to absentee voting and voting during the COVID pandemic that we hope to see pass in time for the November election. We will keep members up to date of any potential action that can be taken to advance those bills. And now, without further ado, I'd like to introduce our first guest, Catherine White. So, Catherine White is the Executive Director of the New Rochelle Chamber of Commerce. She's a 30-year resident of New Rochelle. She is passionate about our city, and she has volunteered with many New Rochelle organizations, nonprofits, and places of worship. All of her children are products of the New Rochelle Public Schools, and she's had a successful career writing about local New Rochelle events and human interest stories. As a licensed Series 7 and Series 63 representative, Ms. White is a co-owner, together with her husband, of a Long Island brokerage firm. So she understands the concerns of business ownership, the struggles to survive in changing economic situations, and the need to provide the best possible opportunities for your employees while still trying to make a profit. His wife's volunteer experience has brought her in contact over the years with key members in the New Rochelle community, and we're looking forward to hearing about the work that Ms. White's been doing on behalf of the New Rochelle Chamber of Commerce during the pandemic. Welcome, Ms. White, and thank you so much for taking the time to speak with the Ballot Box this morning.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
It's our pleasure. We are very interested, first of all, in understanding exactly what the role of the Chamber of Commerce is. Is it an arm of the government? Maybe you can make that distinction for us.
No, it's not. It's something that even my own family members didn't really understand. The Chamber of Commerce is a private membership, not-for-profit organization, technically a 501c6, according to the IRS. So what it is members who are interested have paid dues, but the dues is minimal and doesn't really support the entire organization, so it's also a large portion of our budget would normally be a fundraising arm. And the mission of the Chamber of Commerce is to support our members by working to enhance the economic situations of the city, working in partnership with the city on initiatives, and trying to bring more business opportunities, more employment opportunities to the city and highlight what our businesses are doing, throwing a light on them through our social media, promoting both their business, their services, and their philanthropies, because our businesses are so dedicated to the city that you'll see throughout the year they are not only having fundraisers for themselves, we have not-for-profit organizations like Meals on Wheels or Stars for Cars, not just to support their own initiatives, but they do events for other people. They'll have fundraisers that, you know, in the holiday seasons for the armed services and for Toys for Tots. And they'll do other, the American Legion works to support veterans and people in the services all year round. So I promote, you know, the chamber promotes their philanthropies as well as their actual services that each business provides. But we are actually not part of the city. Everyone thinks we're in City Hall, but we're not. We're separately at 417 North Avenue down the block, and we're not an arm of the city.
So all this work you're doing must be very challenging during the pandemic. How has the nature of your work changed?
It's changed significantly. As I said, we normally would mostly be working with our members, but since the pandemic began, we've been an open essential business. I've been in the office every day, mostly because there's been six other millennials at my house fighting for bandwidth. So simple enough to go to the office and be the only person there. But with that, we answer the phone. If you call, we answer the phone. If we miss you, the message, we get back to you. So especially in the beginning of the pandemic, it was actually easier to reach the chamber than to reach a lot of other people. A city hall was closed. Calls were being moved remotely and passed around. So I was always there. And people kind of thought about calling the chamber before they even thought to call the city because I guess they just heard city closed, let's call this number. And we wound up talking to both residents, just normal citizens who wanted to know how they could help or needed information, business members, of course, businesses throughout the city of New Rochelle calling me up, and then businesses from other municipalities saying, we need some help. We can't reach anybody. You're a big chamber. Can you help us out? And so we've been working to give them information on relief projects and to just even do things like connecting people. We had the Bronxville Chamber of Commerce called us up and said they had a restaurant closing with just a refrigerator and pantry full of food. Who could I give it to? And I connected them with Daniel Bonet and with Timothy McKnight, and they went over and picked up the food and used it in 95 Lincoln and Municipal Housing Authority in the food distribution programs. So we do things like that. Sometimes, Montefiore would call up and say, we've had too many donations of food this evening. Where can we move it? And like, well, have you looked at this nursing home? They haven't gotten anything. Have you looked at this? So we do a lot of connecting in between, too.
It's a real
collaboration.
What value to New Rochelle. So this is a self-funded or fundraiser. There's no payments or funding from the city or other government agencies. About how many members are there in the chamber?
Well, roughly we have about 250 members at this current time. We have a partnership with the city, so we do work on them with different initiatives, starting with, in a normal situation prior to the pandemic, we would do the holiday tree lighting, the parade, and a few other initiatives through the year with the city. So we do work with them on that. And we have a service agreement with them to work through those projects because they involve the city streets and the city, the police and public works and such. So we do have a service agreement and a partnership with the city on those projects.
Understood. Not being a business owner, I had not previously visited the New Rochelle Chamber of Commerce website, and I did in order to learn more about you and the chamber, and it found it to be a wealth of information, tremendously valuable information. I would encourage, because I know there are far more than 200 businesses in New Rochelle, I would encourage every business owner to take a look and to consider membership, because what you do for your members is pre-pandemic was significant, and now during the pandemic, very substantial.
Yeah, we're trying to give everybody the information they need. We're actually in the process of redesigning the website, and the other day a caller into WVOX had a great idea that I should have as many Spanish translations as possible, so that's something we definitely want to incorporate in the website going forward, because I found that a lot of even our own members, English is a second language, and perhaps when reading a very complicated form or relief program, it would be easier to approach that in your primary language. So the city has that in a lot of their websites, and we're going to work on that for ours as well.
Okay.
I've noticed you visibly are amplifying social media posts for your members. One of the things I've enjoyed is your Member Behind the Mask video series on
Facebook.
Oh,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's been really entertaining, and hopefully it's had an impact.
And after the break, we have a break, we'll come back, and you can tell us a little bit about that and what you are doing now during the pandemic.
All right.
1460 WVOX.
Let's return now to the ballot box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, the ballot box on 1460 WVOX.
Thank you. This is Nina Lubin, and we are here with Catherine White, the Executive Director of the New Rochelle Chamber of Commerce. And I'd like to ask Catherine a kind of wide-open question right now, which is, what has the Chamber been doing, Catherine, during the pandemic to give business owners a much-needed leg up?
Well, I guess we'll touch back on social media where we left off.
Yes,
we've kind of changed our social media because that's something in your pocket, in your hand, on your computer, where you can see the Chamber every day and what we're doing. So we're promoting our members on Instagram. We're also doing mini reopening, kind of, we call it cutting out Corona, where people are just cutting ribbons again without city officials and just showing their businesses are open. And we have our Member Behind the Mask series on Facebook, where I'm wearing a mask, they're wearing a mask, and we talk about how their businesses changed, what they've done, what they've during the pandemic, and how they're moving forward. And we've had a lot of good responses on all of those. And then the Chamber itself, one of the things we're working on, I've been an original appointee from County Executive George Latimer to the Westchester County Reopening Task Force. And we have weekly meetings. I have one tomorrow with them. Bridget Gibbons from the Office of Economic Development for the county is co-chair along with Catherine Parker and Louis Lanza. Catherine is a state legislator. Louis is in the hospitality industry. And they chair it. I chair the subgroup for chambers. And we're talking about how best to facilitate the reopening of Westchester County. We're going to be putting out a survey to see how, now that all phases are open in the Mid-Hudson area, which is what New Rochelle is part of, how things are going. Are businesses seeing a lot of shopping inside the stores, or is it still mostly outside? We're trying to gauge the public reaction to the reopening. And we've also worked to distribute PPE, protection equipment, throughout the Westchester County. There have been free masks that have come through county executive that have been distributed. And we're working on a lot of reopening projects and questions that people have. Where do gyms stand? Where do catering halls stand? And we're trying to research that with Albany to get the answers that people in Westchester and throughout the Mid-Hudson region need. So that's the Westchester County Task Force that we're part of. We're also working with the city. We're very proud to be working with the city on several initiatives. One of the most important one would be Rebound New Rochelle. It's an amazing public-private partnership that has gone forward. What the city has done is redirect federal funds and from HUD and from IDA and repurposed them for small business grants and for rental protection. So it's really been an amazing program. It's a partnership, as I said, with the Chamber of Commerce, with the New Rochelle BID, with the Business Council of Westchester, as well as the city's master developer, RXR, and a few other private donors who also come forward and donated a significant amount of money. So that application is on the city website, and it's at ideallynewrochelle.com/rebound. If you go there, it's one of the sites that I said translates specifically into Spanish on every level. Mm-hmm. And it talks about there's an eligibility screener, which you fill out, which we then determine whether or not your business would be considered a micro enterprise or whether it's a small business, so we know which way to direct your application and which pile of funds, as it were, whether the federal funds or the private funds, will be used for your grant. We've gotten over 150 applications on that. We're still accepting applications. We'll begin some of the selection process by the end of July, and those would be small business grants, specifically for New Rochelle, giving us the relief that we really do need. And there's also a rental component on that for anybody who needs tenant-based rental assistance. There's an application for that, and they can apply as well on that.
Just to clarify, that's commercial rent.
Go ahead.
Assistance.
Pardon me?
Correct. Just to clarify, that's commercial rent assistance.
Yes, commercial
to any
assistance.
Of our listeners.
Yes. Not the nonprofits. This one is strictly for commercial businesses. Yes.
Yeah.
And another partnership we have is called New Rochelle Eats Outdoors. We launched it on Father's Day at New Rochelle Eats on Division, where the street was closed down. We had tables in the street. It was a great opening launch. This was when we were still in Phase 2. And it was a great day. We had entertainment there. A jazz group was playing. And we had everybody outside eating on the street. Since then, we've switched to different models. There's more the parklet model, which we have one on Main Street, which four restaurants feed into, which would be Columbian House, Ola Bar, I Got the Juice, and Little Mexican Cafe. And that's just a parking spaces are blocked off. Other things the city has been doing is reusing the city's parking lots. So, for example, by Patsy's Pizza, they've taken the parking spots in that parking lot and put outdoor seating there. And we're working on a similar project at the Golden Horseshoe up in the very, very north end of New Rochelle. And anybody who has got who wants to do outdoor seating, this year the city has waived the fees for a sidewalk cafe. So you just need to apply, have proof of insurance, but you can, you know, anybody can put that out there as a sidewalk cafe. And if anybody wants to redo part of their structure, like a back area that they've never used before, they have to work with the building department, but that also can be set up for the city pretty quickly. And just to allow for as much opportunity and outdoor seating as possible, because that seems to be what the public's very responsive to.
Mm-hmm.
So those are, you know, two big projects that we've been working with the city and very proud to partner with. So very pleased to be having that. And
yeah. I've been downtown when during the Nuro Eats, and it's great because you get such a strong sense of community. The weather's nice. Everyone's outdoors. It's a fabulous effort. So I commend you on that. Does that end soon, the Nuro Eats program?
No, we're just now it's called Nuro Eats Outdoors, and we're, as I said, we're looking to expand to some more. We're open to ideas, and anybody, applications who want to parklet, if you can tell us where you want, tell the city where you want it, or tell the chamber, and we'll put that information forward. You know, because the chamber works in partnership. We've been working with some of our health centers or gyms and trainers that run classes, and we've worked out with the Parks and Rec Department and gotten them park permits where they can have their classes and, you know, again, proof of insurance, registered with the city, but you can legitimately have and advertise classes in the parks, you know, more ideally in the early morning or evenings when it's not full-time being used, so that those gyms who still can't open have some outlet for their clients where they can meet outdoors safely.
This is amazing, Catherine. These are tireless efforts. All reopening projects, publicity, protective equipment, question answering, funding, parklets. Bravo. Bravo.
Well, you know, we
thank
couldn't
you
do it without
so
the city of New Rochelle, without the bid, and without, you know, the
right.
support of the rest. And the most
what
important thing, wear a mask.
Thank you,
thank
Catherine.
Thank you so much, Catherine.
Thank
really
you. Appreciate this fast roundup.
Okay. Thank you very much, ladies.
Take care. Have a good day.
Bye.
With County Legislator Catherine Borgia.
Professionals.
Welcome back to the Ballot Box. This is Nina Luban. I'm here with my co-host Tamar Tate, and we are welcoming Catherine Borgia, who is one of our Westchester County legislators and chair of the Election Information Gathering Task Force. Catherine Borgia is a county legislator for the 9th District. For those of you who haven't memorized our legislative district map, that is covering Ossining, Briarcliff, Croton, parts of Cortland, and the city of Peekskill. Legislator Borgia serves as chair of the Budget and Appropriations Committee, where she aims to ensure that public services in Westchester are delivered effectively and cost-effectively. She serves on a slew of other committees. To save time, I am not naming them now. And she served as the board's majority leader from 2014 to 2017. Now, as critical and as strenuous as all of her responsibilities are, they are not precisely why Legislator Borgia is here today. She is here today in her capacity as a co-chair of the Election Information Gathering Task Force, a newly created entity formed after the June 23rd primary, which was plagued with problems almost from start to finish. It's the job of the task force to avoid those problems come November. Tamar and I and the entire League of Women Voters believe this is one of the critical issues of our time. A representative democracy requires that its citizens vote, and voting the voting process requires clarity, accuracy, and integrity. It's a very, very big job. Time is of the essence, and Legislator Borgia has much else on her plate. Therefore, Tamar and I reiterate our thanks for the time you can spare us this morning, Ms. Borgia. We welcome you to the ballot box.
Sure. I'm happy to be here. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
It's really a pleasure to have you. Time is of the essence. That's true. So let me jump right in. When did it become obvious that there were significant primary vote problems, and can you identify some of them?
Well, I think that we all knew that the primary was going to be a challenging election. You know, we live in very different circumstances now than even last year. There's been a lot of election law, positive election law changes that we've had to adjust to, including early voting and the reduction in the requirements for mail-in balloting. Then, of course, with the governor's executive orders, we knew that there was going to be a tremendous amount of people who took advantage of mailing in their ballots because they were afraid to come to the polling place. However, as the day unfolded on primary day, we really saw that there were many, many, many people. It was much higher voter turnout than we've seen in primaries in the past. We know that the November election is going to be a critical election. Every presidential year over the past four cycles, we've seen a pretty big jump in number of voters who have voted on election day for president. And we know that this is going to be a huge election. So what we noticed was where things went right, which was the early voting component, and where things went wrong, which was how, you know, we don't want people standing online, where the choke points were for people waiting for the primary to vote in person at the primary. And we just really we know that we have a few months now where we can maybe address some of those issues. Of course, bigger issues might require the state, but there's lots of things we could do here at the local level. So we just wanted to pull together all of the information. We wanted to get stakeholder comments. We know that we want to make sure that everyone who is enfranchised and wants to vote is able to vote in November. And we really want this to be a collaborative effort. The Board of Legislators is very committed to working with both the County Executive's Administration and the Board of Elections to, you know, make sure that we give the resources, the help, the communication to the public that we can all do together. So I think it was not so much in response to a crisis as it is anticipatory, looking forward to trying to make November be as best as it can be.
Who is on the task force?
So the task force is myself and Vedant Ghoshi, who is the chair of the Public Works Committee. Chairman Ben Boykin appointed the two of us to run this task force because most of the decisions that happen around the Board of Elections come under either my committee, the Budget and Appropriations Committee, or Vedant's committee, which is Public Works. And then he also asked the majority leader, Mayor Jane Schimsky, to be on it, and Vice Chair Elfrieda Williams. Now, Elfrieda brings a lot of experience to elections because prior to her service as a county legislator, she spent many years as the clerk in Greenberg back when the local clerks ran elections. So she's pretty invaluable on the task force.
I'm curious how the task force and the Board of Legislators and the Board of Elections are going to actually collaborate. I mean, am I correct that the Board of Legislators technically doesn't have jurisdiction over the Board of Elections? Is that right?
So it's a complicated relationship. There's some levels of authority that both the County Executive's Administrative Team and the Board of Legislators have that influence how the Board of Elections runs. But the Board of Elections is semi-autonomous, and they actually run under the auspices of the New York State Board of Elections. So they do have some more ability than, say, another commissioner like the Public Works Commissioner has to do things on their own because they are charged with running elections. And if, that's their primary responsibility. So they have some authority that goes beyond the normal way that the two branches of government and the departments typically run. We do approve their budget, though. That happens at budget time. If there are things that need to be adjusted during the course of the year, if it's internal to their budget, meaning that they can source other resources to spend money in a way that they desire to spend money, they can do They can do that. They have some level of authority. If there it needs to be budget transfers that allocate money from other resources outside of the Board of Elections, that will come to the Board of Legislators. And we also need to approve the borrowing for capital expenditures. So, for example, if we decide that we one of the things that we saw was that there that we need to have many more printers and many more of our iPad check-in devices, which work beautifully and are very much easier for our poll workers than the big books, and you can get instantaneous information from them, and they wanted to purchase a lot of them, then we would have to, the Board of Legislators would approve the bond to pay for those. Now, what's happened in the past is that they have done some purchasing using their operating budget funds, but for the finances of Westchester County, it is much smarter when you're making investments in equipment that's going to last you a long time to bond for that equipment because, as we all know, we have a cash flow issue because of COVID, and it makes more sense for municipalities to bond for long-term purchases. So that's kind of how we work together. The other thing, too, that I feel as an elected official in Westchester County is I want to make sure that people have confidence in the process. You know, we've seen a lot of distrust in general in a lot of our electoral processes in the past recent years. We know that sometimes there's outside influences influencing people's opinions about elections. And we just want to make sure that everyone knows how to vote, the options they have for voting, and we want to make sure every vote counts. So, you know, we have a moral obligation, I would say, too. But we do have to all work collaboratively. We at the Board of Legislators have the bully pulpit. We can get a lot of information out to people. The Board of Elections has, you know, their responsibilities and their and the things that they, you know, are charged with doing. But we can assist, and that's what we're seeking to do. The task force is really a way for us to say, hey, here are some things that we've identified that can make it better. We want to help. We want to help. We want to all work together.
How are you gathering that information?
I'm sorry?
How are you gathering that information?
So, you know, many of us just heard from our constituents. That was part of the reason why we created this task force, because we heard a lot of ad hoc information, and many of us were at a lot of election sites.
I think that music is our cue that we're going to have to pick back.
Okay. We'll come back and talk about information gathering with Legislator Borgia after the break.
Once again, The Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back to The Ballot Box. My co-host Nina Lubin and I are speaking with Catherine Borgia, Chair of the Election Information Gathering Task Force. Legislator Borgia, before the break, we were discussing how the task force is gathering information going forward to ensure a smooth election in November. Can you please elaborate?
Sure. So, you know, a lot of legislators and the county executive and other electeds got some feedback that they passed along to us, and we realized we really wanted to hear the broadest possible spectrum of people's issues, concerns, and also ideas. So we created this task force. We had one public meeting, which we did virtually. It was our first big public meeting that that we did over WebEx, and it went pretty well. We had about 70 people on that meeting. We got about 50 people commenting. And we have received already a little bit more than 100 as of yesterday, written comments, and we're asking people to continue to comment, till the end of today. We're going to put together a report which will disseminate very widely, about people's experiences and what we think we can do in the short term and then some things that are a little bit longer term. But it's a very robust process, and it's really made better by people, sharing their experiences with us and contributing to that. You know, one of the things I want to mention is that we're so grateful to people who have taken their time to really look at this issue and help us figure out ways to make November better.
Right. So to our listeners, you have until deadline 5 p.m. today, July 15th, to send your comments about the primary election, the good, the bad, the beautiful, the ugly, any suggestions you might have, to this email address. Please pick up a pen or a pencil or your notepad. It's B as in boy, O-L, publiccomments@westchesterlegislators.com. B-O-L, that's for Board of Legislators, B-O-L, public comments at westchesterlegislators.com. This is your chance to help guide our democracy.
Okay. So I'm curious what the bulk of complaints and comments have revolved around to date.
So I would say we've heard three things. One was confusion about where to vote. So, and that was true both of early voting and in-person voting, because we had to consolidate a lot of poll sites because of not being it for myriad reasons, but the biggest one being that we didn't have enough poll workers to open all of the sites, and some of the sites were not available to us that typically are available to us. So because of COVID, basically. So we weren't, for example, we frequently had things in facilities that are, housing for the elderly. That was not appropriate during time of COVID to have the public marching into a home where they, you know, where a place where there might be many, many, many people who are particularly vulnerable living. So we had a greatly reduced number of poll sites on Election Day. We had the same number of early voting sites as we had had in the November election, November 19 election. But people had confusion about where their polling site was. Then at the day of the election, we had two roadblocks that caused time delays. First of all, we were very, very conscientious. The poll workers did a great job in making sure that everything was sanitized between every voter. I voted early with my daughter, who I quarantined with. And even though I said, you know, we're together in a household, the workers did clean the iPad after each one of us had touched it. So I think that's great. You know, we're really taking this very seriously. That, though, does have a time delay. But the real two time blocks that we saw were the check-in point and then the printers. Several printers were jammed or inoperable that caused delays at different polling sites. There was one polling site where, it was obvious that there weren't a sufficient number of printers at the polling site. So I think that three of the things that we're going to really focus on that we have complete control over in Westchester County is making sure we have enough of that equipment, the check-in polling books and the printers, making sure that the sites are able to accommodate people. One of the problems was primary day was very hot, and so people were on a socially distanced line that got to be quite long, and they were outside in the sun. So for some people who were elderly or infirm, it was a very difficult thing to stay online for more than an hour. So we need to look at the polling places, see, okay, if we're going to have big lines because people are anxious to vote, how are we going to snake them around inside so that people can stay socially distanced but also stay comfortable, especially if it's inclement weather in November? And how do we make sure that the check-in process goes a little bit more smoothly? And that's going to require that we have more poll workers, that we train more poll workers, because it is a persnickety process to do the elections right. And we're really encouraging people. You know, our poll workers are usually this dedicated army of people. Many of them are older. You know, the average age is probably well older than 60. So there are people who might be in jeopardy for the pandemic. So we need to really recruit many, many, many more people. I'm going to get trained as a poll worker, for example, so I can be at a poll in my district and make sure things run smoothly. So I think those are the opportunities that we have. Now, I also believe that for the future, early voting and mail-in voting are going to be much more significant in future elections. I really encourage people to vote early. You have 10 days. It's really a very easy process. Very rarely are there lines, except usually the first day. So that's going to be something that's going to work, I think, better for us in the future as people get used to it. And we're also working with our state delegation to see if we can make the mail-in ballot process just a little bit easier and less complicated. They started this work last year in the last legislative session to change a thing that is in the New York State Constitution. It has to pass two different sessions of the legislature and then be put on for referenda. So next year, after the 2020 election that starts a new legislative session, if they pass these laws again in the 2021 year, we'll see it on the ballot in November of 2021. But until then, the governor has wide executive power granted to him by the legislature for the pandemic, And we're just working to see if we can make that process, the absentee ballot process, just run a little bit more smoothly, because a lot of people chose absentee ballots. On the back end, we also have to figure out how to process absentee ballots in a, you know, in that such a great higher volume. So we got in almost 70,000 absentee ballots, which was probably four times the amount we had ever received for our primary. So, you know, there's work to be done on the back end, too, on, okay, if this is the new normal, how are we going to handle that?
Right.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of uncertainty over the absentee ballot process. I think a lot of people felt, like, obliged to vote in person on primary day, sort of as an insurance, which probably accounted for the increase in people that you weren't expecting showing up at the polls. I think people had a more peace of mind that their absentee ballot was received and counted, maybe they wouldn't have shown up.
Yeah. That was one of the really excellent solutions that came out of the meeting, which was, if there is a way to have people check in to see whether their absentee ballot was received. So I guess just to give you an example, in my family, my daughter requested an absentee ballot, never received the ballot. So I happened to work at the McCallion office building across the street from the Board of Elections. So I went in with another application and said, can I pick this up? You are allowed to do pickup. I got it to her. She filled it out and I brought it back. I'm kind of in the know. I was able to do that. But people should understand, you know, all of the different things that they are able to do. And the other thing that people didn't understand, and even some of our poll workers didn't understand, was even if you have voted absentee, you can still vote in person early or on election day, and that nullifies your absentee ballot. So that's always been in the law. That's always been available to people. But I think people just, didn't necessarily understand that. We also are probably going to try to work collaboratively with the White Plains Post Office to say, because it's a prepaid envelope that goes back to the Board of Elections, how do we make sure that we know when this ballot came in? So other states have done sort of creative things. I also love the idea. I don't know if we can do it for November, but I love the idea for the future of having drop boxes where you can put in your absentee ballot that's exclusively for the collection of absentee ballots. I've seen that on the news. That was another one of the recommendations that came from the League of Women Voters, I believe. And I just think that's a really, really smart idea.
Yeah.
So that way you have some
assurance. New Rochelle local elections had drop boxes for the New Rochelle School Board, and I think they work really well. They relieve a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
For members of the public, Ms. Borgia, who would like to be able to help to make this so, you mentioned the need for more poll workers. You mentioned a couple of things that maybe require public help that is not necessarily being at the polls. I mean, someone has to count those absentee ballots, and someone has to check to make sure that, a written ballot is discarded if someone shows up at the polls. So for anyone who's looking to help, as these processes get put in place, do they contact our Westchester Board of Elections? Would that be the route?
Yes, you can do either the Board of Elections or you can that email address that that you read out is always active. So you can contact the Board of Legislators too with offers to help. We'll make sure that everybody receives that the Board of Elections receives it. The other thing too is really help us with communication. Anything that the county puts out, if people could, use their social media platforms to make sure that their friends know about it, that's great.
Good. Forward. Okay. I'm afraid our time is coming to a close. Thank you for the wealth of information that you provided today. Any last questions, Tamar?
Nope. I just wanted to thank Legislator Borgia and also our prior guest, Catherine White. And as a final note, I just wanted to tell everyone the next ballot box is going to be Wednesday morning, August 19th at 9 a.m.
Okay, and we'll sign off with a thank you to our sound engineer, Gerald Bell. Take care, everybody. Have a good day.